It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine.
Yes, it is.
With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron,
Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Damas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine. Oh, yeah.
We're back.
Here we are. That's right. Just like we were just here yesterday.
It seemed that way. It just seems that.
Yeah.
Actually, we were like, here just yesterday.
We were here yesterday at 12 o'clock noon Eastern Standard. 12 o'clock noon Eastern Standard Time for a great show, great discussion. We had a fantastic guest, as we have all this time. I'm just saying, you know, it was different to have a show at that time, and you know who we had on there was just fantastic. So if you missed it, it is in the archives and it'll be replayed next week. So during this program, during this time slot. So just really, really cool. Great to have him on. Greg Jones, professor and research climatologist with the Southern Oregon University, was on yesterday at 12 noon for almost an hour and 10 minutes or so. Yeah, right. Well, right around there, and very interesting. So, if you missed it, might play it on the archives.
We left it open too for him to join us again sometime. So, you know, it's just, man was really informative. He had lots to say about climate. He's a climatologist basically, but climate, soil, and all sorts of stuff about wine. Really quite an interesting episode. But well, if you can't wait, archive it.
Yeah.
And if you can wait, then it'll be on next week.
That's right. Yeah. But
tonight
we have two guests scheduled. We're going to go back to Illinois first, I believe. Is that the White Oak Vineyards? Yes. That is
White Oak Vineyards.
Okay. We will go there first to Carlock, Illinois with our first guest. And I'll go get them in a second. And then we'll continue on with Oregon. And we'll have a special guest from Caprice Vineyards and Winery in Central Point, Oregon, which I believe is near, is that the one near Medford?
Yeah,
it's in the south also, right?
Yeah, it's in the south also. That'll finish us up in the South Oregon this week. But,
there's plenty more to go because the wine industry in Oregon is hopping and busy. And so there's more to cover there. Yes, we are not done with Oregon this week, definitely. So, all right, let me go get our first guest, and I'll see you.
I'll call for a couple minutes while you go find them and get them on the air. We, like Mike and I were telling you, we had ourselves a very interesting guest yesterday from Southern Oregon University is where he is teaches. That's his school. And he was Gregory Jones, is his name, degree in climatology and a PhD in climatology. And so the climate really is his bottom line. That's really where he has it. But he's written books and all sorts of stuff around this country on different things. So It's a good listen. Really interesting yesterday, and we'll play it for you next Thursday night. We are heading back east again. We've been in Oregon. We've been doing this, the country in alphabetical order. But tonight, we are going back east. Now, let me tell you really the reason why. I was in the winery, and in come this couple, this lovely couple, who started to talk with me and all that. And they said, "We have a winery." And I go, "Oh, wow, really? Where?" And they said, "In Illinois." And I go, "Wow." I said, "So tell me about your winery." And they just recently opened the winery. The winery's only been open, I think, since Memorial Day, something like that, although their grapes have been planted for some time. But as we were talking, and we talked quite some time, a really, really enjoyable conversation, and I said, "Say, I do a Blog Talk radio program. Would you all mind coming on and talking on the program?" And they said, "We would love to," or words to that effect. At least they didn't reach over and slap me. So they are on tonight. They are Rudy and Mary Hoffman. I don't know which one is on the line because it says both of them on the line. I see they're waiting. From White Oak Vineyards, which is located in Carlock, Illinois. And we'll get them on now and have them tell us what's happening. So, who have we got, Mary or Rudy or both of you?
Oh, actually, both of us are here today.
Fantastic. Welcome on the program. Good to talk with you again.
Thank you.
That was quick.
Yeah.
I was just starting with the archive part of it, and you grabbed them
out of my
hands. I
took away from you.
So I'll get back with you on that later, I guess.
Okay.
What we're talking about there is the fact that when I contacted Mary a couple of days ago, I guess, and she says she's having problems pulling up archives on our program. So
I was just getting to that, and next thing I know, they're gone. So
if you want to finish it, because maybe some of our listeners out there might.
I can do that, or I can email it, whatever be easier. But it's just you go to the show page, blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine, and then you pick the episode that you want and click on that, the title of it. That'll take you to the specific page, and you'll see underneath there's a player that you can listen to it on the page, and then there's underneath that player there's links, and it'll say play in your own player or download this episode, and you can click on that and save that to your own, you know, however you want to do it that way. You don't have to go to iTunes or anything. It's just it's just one more avenue, because you can find it on there and download it to your iPod or, you know, whatever the listeners have. So
you can even download your episode to your website, too. And so you can link to it there.
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds easy.
Kind of fast. But I was kind of getting into it a little too fast there. But, I can. If you need more details, I can easily email that to you. It's not a problem. Or just send
–
I could just send you the episode, so.
You know what? That might be the easiest. That might be the easiest way.
Okay.
You're not talking to computer gurus here.
All right, no problem. We'll do that, and I'll send you your clip of, you know, if you want the whole show, you want just your part, not a problem. I'll send it to you. So.
Well, whatever. It's all good, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
No problem.
Thanks,
anyway.
Mike.
So we're here talking
right.
about.
For our listeners, Mary, you and I and Rudy talked while you were in the winery. Before the listeners, tell us about White Oak Vineyards.
Oh, gracious. Where do we begin? White Oak Vineyards is in central Illinois. We're smack dab in the state, middle of the state, between Bloomington, Normal, and Peoria, Illinois, right off of I-74. We're a small mom-paw winery, I guess, if you want to call us that. We have 22 acres, whereby 9.5 are planted in vineyard. And we established the vineyard in 2003. And we have 12 different varieties growing out in the vineyard now. And Rudy probably can tell you how many plants are out there better than I can. How many do we have out there?
Around 5,000 now.
Yeah.
5,000 plants for... Every variety is about an acre. It's about 500 to 600 plants. And, like Mary said, it's about 9.5 acres right now. And we ordered some more wines for this next season. And, yeah, we will see how far we get.
that's true. And as far as the how the work is done, it's Rudy and myself with very little help, I'll say that. We do have one very nice Mexican gentleman from our parish that helps us in the spring and the summer with some of the harder things that we need to have done out in the vineyard. As far as the tasting room is concerned, the tasting room itself is small, and it used to be a residence. We purchased the neighboring property in 2010,
yeah,
and started to remodel the house. And so what used to be a living room kitchen is now the tasting room, and we also do all the bottling and processing of the wine in what used to be the garage. So we're not your big winery production area whatsoever, but we do have about the first year that we were getting ready to actually open up, we processed around 2,000 gallons of wine, which gave us around 840 cases. And this year, out in the winery now in tanks, just kind of going through cold stabilization right now, we've got about 1,300 gallons going through right now. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Rudy,
Rudy,
what grapes you grow there? Tell us what all.
We have, like I said, from every variety, it's about an acre. It starts out, the oldest are the Ceval grapes, and then we have Frontenac grapes, and Vignol, and Marcel Foch, and then there's Traminet and Cayuga, and Stuben, and we established a new vineyard about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and there are St. Croix, and some Chardonnay, and what else? Yeah, we try one row, it's a trial, a Riesling, but I think it's too cold here, and it's like I said, it's just a trial, and we probably cannot go any further with the Riesling because I think it's just too cold.
We're on that borderline area of whether it can really survive here or not. So.
Huh. That's,
and
you know,
we have K Gray. Mm-hmm.
And we also have K Gray, another about 3/4 of an acre. It's on the new property what we purchased last year, and there's also some more Frontenac. Frontenac are really good growers around here. They're really good carrying fruit and very winter hardy. I think it's a good grape for our climate here.
Uh huh. What type of soil do you have in that area?
Well, we have a. Oh, Matt, you would ask that question. Thanks, Ron.
Normally it's a really, actually it's the best soil around here. McLean County is known as with the best soil in Illinois, I think.
Yes, it is.
It's a very
black
heavy
soil, yeah.
Black soil. And I think it's even, sometimes you think it's too good for the grapes.
Our particular property, though, does have quite a mixture of different soil types.
Loam, yeah.
We have some clay going on. We do have some different. We do have some. How I want to say this? Some problems with the different soil types. We don't have that pure black soil specifically on our property. What my dad would have called waste land, he would never have put a corn or soybean crop on there. So we put a grain on it.
Our land used to be in corn and grapes. Corn and beans, I was going to say.
Yeah, but it's...
You're in the Midwest. You got clay. I mean, that's what happens.
Yes.
Yes. But, you know, we do have some varieties that are more vigorous than others. Like Rudy said, the Frontenac is a really vigorous grower here. We had our largest crop out of that particular block this last year. And what we thought... we were only going to have 2.5 tons. We ended up having over 4 tons on, four rows. So, yeah, it was a really good harvest out of the Frontenac, whereby the Saval had some winter damage a couple of years on it, and it's still trying to recover. So we have one variety that's really vigorous and aggressive, and then we have others that just they're still fending for their place in the line. The Vignoles are also very slow growers here, but once they do take on, they produce a really nice fruit. But again, they're very slow. Our red varieties here seem to be our best growers. The Foch, the Maréchal Foch, the Marquette, although we only put it in a couple, is it a year ago or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And that seems to be a really nice varietal. It was developed out of the University of Minnesota, and it's obviously a cold hardy variety, and it seems like it's really doing well out there. So,
but they're still young.
Yeah, they're young out there. So, but it seems like our red varieties participate better than the white varieties, and the white wine is our bigger challenge of all things.
For the purpose of our listeners, the Frontenac is a red grape. It's a red wine.
Yes.
What do you do with it? I mean, do you oak it? Do you make it real heavy and bold, or do you try to keep it light and fruity? What are you doing?
Yes, it's like you already said, it's a red variety, and we put it in oak berries.
Yeah. How long?
We had our first batch was about 9 months,
mm-hmm.
9 months in the oak barrels, and I have also to say they are new barrels,
uh-huh.
So it goes a little faster. I mean, the second or the third year, it probably takes a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got the second year Frontenac now in these used barrels, and they've been in almost a year now, and
but they're still
we're going to let them sit there for a little while. That first batch that we had was a bold. It was a heavier red. It's actually, I think, of all the wines that we have, we don't have like this huge variety of wines and tasting room. We have seven actually, but it was the most popular, and we sold out of that in November. So.
Wow.
Obviously, we did something right, I would think.
You would think, right, yeah.
I think so.
What oak are you using?
It's an American oak.
From?
From Missouri. We
get the barrel from Missouri, yes.
Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
We've,
called McGinnis
Wood
Products, and they specialize in Missouri oak.
Around the area.
Around that area,
Where the company is, yeah.
A lot of wineries I've talked to have told about Minnesota oak, how much they love the Minnesota oak that Minnesota is using right now. That's why I was wondering if, Missouri oak has been around for a long time. It's been available quite some time, but Minnesota oak. We also talked to a couple people who grabbed some from Texas and used some Texas oak, which seemed rather odd.
I have to be quite honest. I have never heard about Texas oak.
I thought it was odd too. But we had a couple of people tell us that they were using Texas oak. But Minnesota oak is really becoming quite popular now in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
So you use stainless steel for whites and oak for all of your reds, or?
Well, we don't ferment in the oak. We do the primary fermentation, if you want to so call that, in the vats. We let it sit, obviously, on the skins for a few days and do the punch down, and then we transfer that after we've pressed it into the steel tanks. So everything is in the steel tanks. The whites are in the steel tanks. Only after the reds have really settled through and basically are finished, then we'll transfer them for aging into the oak barrels, where we do realize that some people do fermentation in oak. We don't do that.
Okay.
I will have to say we're not the great experts that we can claim that we know everything there is to know. And we're just beginners here,
Nobody knows everything.
No, and it seems like right now that works best for us until we get a little more experience under our belts. I will say this, we do have, through the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association, we have people that we can concur with if we have questions about, you know, really, how should we do this? How should we approach this process? Then we can call our cohorts, and they give us little hints. And pretty much everybody does that primary fermentation and puts it in steel tanks and transfers over to oak barrels. So we're just following suit.
Yeah, most people do that anyway, it's except for the people who have a lot of money to store wine in oaks all the time. So,
good for them.
Yeah, that's right. Your climate there, your highs in the summer and lows in the summer, your highs and lows in the winter, when do you get your bud break, and when do you have to harvest, all because of the weather?
Bud break is around, I would say, May.
End of April, May, depends.
Yeah. And the high temperature is, I would say last year we had about 100, 105.
Wow.
And just a couple of days, but it was high and hot.
Yes. You know, what we have here, too, is a real, the humidity, which is a real challenge for diseases. We don't necessarily have that Pierce's disease that you all have down in the south, but we do have, you know, other issues with the high temperatures and the high humidity. But
insects. Yes. The Japanese beetle is a big issue.
Wow.
And, and also molds. What's the name?
Well, downy mildews.
Downy mildews. Just about everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably everywhere, and especially on the Cayugas.
And the powdery mildews.
Powdery mildew, yeah.
But getting back to that temperature, this last summer we have the luck that we have a few days in between varietals that are ready to come in. Well, we had an extremely hot summer this last summer, and everything was ready to come into the winery all at once.
Oh.
And we've never had that. Well, we've only been doing this a few years, but we've never had that happen to us where everything had to come in all at once. So room in the winery was an issue. We planned to have so and so many tanks for so and so much, and then as a result, everything was coming in at the same time. We were sweating, and not just because of the hot temperatures. So we're trying to figure out where we're going to put all of this. But our high temperature, like Rudy said, was about 110 degrees. 105 degrees. And then the lowest, I don't know.
It gets down. I mean, in wintertime we have now.
It was supposed to get down to -1 tonight.
To the single digits.
Yeah. Of course, we have that wind chill factor, too. The temperature itself is just supposed to be like -1, but once the wind starts going, it can be anywhere from...
It can be cold a lot.
It's nasty.
No,
shivering.
Stop.
And the next thing is also, now there is no snow or hardly any snow, so the grapevines are right out in the cold. I mean, they are exposed. Normally when we had snow a few years ago, it wasn't this bad because everything was covered with snow and ice.
Right.
So it was a little easier for the grapes, but now there's nothing on there.
Another problem, Ron, that we're having with this particular winter is that, like Rudy said, we haven't had any snow. Our temperatures have been higher than normal this winter so far. So,
yeah.
In fact, before we came down and ran into you, when we left home, the temperature was hitting around 50 degrees here. Which the dormancy was not happening in the vines. And generally, November, December, it's so cold here that the vines are, you can pretty much say, they've gone dormant. We've had extremely high temperatures. January, we had high temperatures. And now it's tonight and yesterday it was really, really cold. So, a lot of times we'll start pruning already the end of January and February because we know the plants have gone dormant. Well, we're not so sure that they really are yet.
Wow, that's dangerous. Yeah.
And it's very dangerous.
Yes, that's it.
Because we could go, you could go through and prune everything and say, oh, yay, we're done. We don't have to worry about that. but if it doesn't get real cold soon, I don't know what we're going to do, because the problem is April, it could blossom out, and then we could have a late freeze like we had a couple of years ago, and then it destroyed everything. So
right.
We're kind of in a predicament with the climate right now.
Yeah, I was looking at the list of the grapes. Are all of those cold hardy though? I mean, can everything survive this deep cold?
Yeah, normally it does. I mean, we have to replace some, but like Mary said, a couple of years ago we had this late frost and we had about 90% from the Sauvignon grapes we had to replace, actually.
Wow.
They are.
They're on that borderline.
A little sensitive, yeah.
They're on a borderline. As the Riesling, like Rudy said before, the Riesling is an experiment that I guess I have to take the blame for. I just decided, you know, we do have a Riesling wine here, and, you know, the long-term goal would be have enough that we could say, okay, we have just our own grapes for that particular wine. But fact of the matter is we do have to buy those grapes from someone else. But we're on that borderline, and the Riesling have a real hard time in this particular climate. They've survived the last couple of years fine. They get going up on the trellis, and they look like, and they actually get little fruit on them, and then all of a sudden the Japanese beetles come. The Japanese beetles love those Rieslings. They're the first ones they get.
They are the first they get on there.
Yeah. So as far as cold hardy, every other variety that we have is definitely cold hardy variety. The Chardonnay, however, are also on a borderline.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do order our grapes, we order all of our vines right now from the AA Vineyards in the Finger Lakes region of New York,
uh-huh.
up in Fredonia. And, you know, obviously, I think anybody who does or has anything to do with, you know, growing grapes knows who they are. And they publish a catalog with temperature zoning.
The scale on that.
So, you know, we base all of our purchases on this temperature zoning. And so it's every year we put new grapes in because somewhere along the line something has been damaged or somebody has hit it with a mower or dogs have knocked something down or something like
or
that.
Or the wind.
Or the wind.
There's always something. Yes, that's right.
It's a challenge. Yes. It's definitely a challenge.
Without
something.
A doubt. You and I were talking, Mary, about government. I want to get into government, how it is in that area, how it treats it. And it's not just you. I always ask people this, so I'm not singling you out. But government, good, bad, indifferent, wish they were dead. You want to hug them? What...
oh, gosh. I really
tell
can't
us about
say I want to hug them. Oh, gracious sakes. Well, first of all, I guess, you know, to kind of get back, I suppose it's a roundabout way of answering your question, but I think probably your listeners have detected that you know, Rudy's got a German accent, and we had lived in Germany for 25 years, and we came back to this area where I'm originally from and bought this property. And just through coincidence, we started the vineyard. And at that time, we didn't really have any intention of doing or issues with the government. And we only started having issues once we decided, oh, yeah, we're going to pursue the winery at some point. So here we had been growing grapes and for a few years and selling them to other vintners, and then we decide, okay, good, we're going to pursue the winery. We go to our local building and zoning in our particular county, and I will say that we now are the only commercial winery and vineyard in McLean County. So that having been said, they don't really know how to categorize us. So getting back to this... Pardon me? They did not know. Well, I don't think they still know, actually, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, about 5 years ago, we decided, okay, we're going to pursue this. We go to the building and zoning, and we say, all right, what do we need to do? And they kind of smirked at us and said, well, first of all, did you not know that you are in a dry township? And the township has been dry for 120 years. And what makes you think that you, who have lived out of the country for over 25 years,
can change
this? And, you know, we're thinking, well, it's, you know, what could happen that it doesn't work? But we're putting our everything that we have at stake. I mean, we had really invested so much money in the vineyard that we had no choice but to follow the winery, because that's where the buck is in the bottle. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. And so we had to go to our township and collect signatures to have a referendum. Long story short, we were able to get the 167 signatures that we needed, whereby Rudy had to take me to these different places. He not being a citizen, could not get the signatures himself. So we did get the signatures. We did get it on the referendum. We won by 3 votes only.
Wow.
And it was a very confusing voting procedure. The people didn't quite understand the question, and it was, at first they thought we lost, and anyway, we won. So we kind of laid low for a while. This is a very, very conservative area here. We didn't do anything for a while, and then about 2 years ago, we decided, okay, we're really going to go for it. Yeah, that's when the fun really started then. where the government needed, I think, to see our checkbook every time we even drove in towards Bloomington. It's a permit here, a permit there. The health department didn't know exactly where to categorize us. So it's been a challenge. I will say the individual persons that we're working with are all very, very nice. It's just that...
I think it was new for them.
It was new for them, and they didn't know where to put us. I think, though, after having paid our, paying our sales tax that I did today, and the gallonage taxes and all those things, that's where I would like to see a little less government involvement.
Oh, yeah. End of month, end of year, end of quarter, everything.
Yeah.
I just did the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm preaching to the choir here. Anybody who does this knows that, you know, we all have to pay the gallonage taxes. We all have to pay the excise tax.
Taxes, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we understand that and gladly we pay, but, you know, it doesn't have to be to the point where you have to push one bill here and one bill there to figure out how to pay the government. And what really upsets us a little bit is that we don't feel that we are getting anything back from the government to help us in our pursuit. I don't mean to be picking at my corn and soybean neighbors, because I also grew up on that kind of a farm. But I would like to see in the grape industry also subsidies being distributed and helping the grape growers and the orchard people give us some help, too. We need that help, but we don't get any. So that's where I'm thinking the government could maybe change a little. I mean, I know that's not going to ever happen, but it's nice.
Well, no, the thing is now, don't say it's not going to happen, because it takes people like you and Rudy and other vineyards to do that. We've talked to people in Maryland, and the guy in Maryland said that he has been working with the government, and they've just recently changed the laws there. When we talked to him, he said it was just within a month of when we talked to him. This was, 6 months ago. And he said that they allowed the wineries to sell at farmers markets and stuff like that. So, you know, it has to start somewhere. And instead of, you know, just shaking your head and shrugging your shoulders, you really have to do something. And
I'm just...
You... Go.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just following along. This is Mike again, sorry. Originally, you said you were located in a dry township.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the signatures that you needed, and you won by 3 votes, but that was such a victory that, you know, you're already making changes to progressiveness,
it
sounds like you're...
That was a huge change.
Yeah.
You know, 120 years, and I will say this, we have had people in our little area who have actually come to us and thanked us for being so bold, and because, you know, it's difficult to come back to the country. I was out of the country for 25 years, and Rudy had never lived in the United States. And you know, so we were, although I grew up in this area, people had not remembered who I was, nor, I mean, who and why should they? But it was bold. It was a bold attempt, and because a lot of people said, oh, it's not going to happen. And we thought, okay, what have we got to lose? Let's just go for it. And so, yes, it's true. Yes, we have made some changes.
That's amazing.
But, again, we've also, been challenged with, some things about the remodelings and that kind of thing that we wanted to do. And every time you want to put something on your own property, that has to be authorized and that kind of thing. But it is true. I mean, we have made significant change here, and the community has really taken us on as their own. I mean, they really think that, they just belong to us.
Some people came and said, thank you for putting us on the map again.
Well, that's great, though. And those are steps that need to be taken. Those are things that, baby steps, and it's an improvement, So, Mike was just saying, you did something and you got it done, and that's great.
It's like you're pioneering this for future generations to, and people right now who might be interested in this, they have a couple of doors open because of the work that you've done so far, that's fantastic.
That's true. That's one thing too. It's kind of, it's say pioneering. As kitschy as it may sound, when Rudy and I met many, many, many years ago, I won't say how many, but it's been a long time ago. One thing we knew that we always wanted to do, we always wanted to farm. And Rudy grew up on a dairy farm in a small village outside of Munich, Germany. And the possibility of ever having our own farm in Germany was basically, would not have ever happened. For us to have a corn and soybean operation or a cattle operation or anything over here in larger terms, that was not going to happen. But we always knew we wanted to be involved in agriculture one way or the other. And this opportunity, the doors just keep on opening for us, it seems. It's meant to be. And so it's just this whole pioneering thing. We're doing what so many people have dreamed to do in their lifetime, and we've been given that opportunity. So to really knock down the government or knock down what things, it's probably not a fair thing for us to do because we have had an opportunity, and we're pursuing it. We are doing, if you will, that American dream.
Fantastic.
Now, I won't say it's easy by any means.
Never is. Yeah.
But
on the other side, it's like you have a saying, as long as you can complain, you're fine. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's a good point. You're right. Yeah.
I mean,
when it gets to the point where you're being subdued from your complaining, then you need to worry.
I guess if we wake up in the morning and know that everything hurts, that we're still good to go out in the vineyard.
That's right. That's right. Well, you guys, we got another guest going to be coming on shortly, so I'm going to let you give all the information about White Oak Vineyards. Tell us where you're located, the email address, your phone numbers, Facebook, everything. So if anybody out there wants to get in touch with you guys or to give you a kudos, keep up the good work, then they can do so.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, okay. It's White Oak Vineyards. Our address is 8621 East 2100 North Road in Carlock, Illinois. 61725. Our website is www.whiteoakvineyardsinc.com, all small. It will link to Facebook, and you can put in your comments in the Facebook there. Email address is Hoffman Mary, Hoffmann Mary at msn.com. And our telephone number is 309-376-3027. We're located smack dab, Central Illinois, just off of I-55/74, between Bloomington Normal and Peoria, Illinois.
Exit is Carlock.
Exit Carlock, Illinois. We put Carlock back on the map.
There you go. Thank you all very much. Thanks for stopping by the winery. Hope you enjoyed the wines you bought.
Yes, we did.
Good,
yes.
And we'll look forward to... But if you're ever down this area again, come see me. If I'm ever up there, I will definitely stop and see you. And
well,
thanks for being on the program.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye.
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 Bye. All right. Now, we get to travel back to Oregon. We've been in Oregon this week. We just did that little side trip back to Illinois. But we're coming back to Oregon. Southern Oregon. We're going to Caprice Vineyards next. We are talking to Jim. And he is the, I guess, everything for Caprice Vineyards. And he will tell us about Caprice Vineyards, and he will fill us all in and all that. So, Jim, you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Caprice Vineyards. Tell us about it.
Yes. Caprice Vineyards is our little venture into the wine winemaking world. We are in southern Oregon, just above the California border. We're in the Rogue Valley Appellation. It's a hot summer area that grows a lot of very good Bordeaux-style wines. We came up there to that area from Southern California looking for land for our alpacas. And we found a perfect piece just outside of Jacksonville in Central Point, kind of between the two cities. And it just happened to have a vineyard on it. What do you do? You got to make wine.
What else? Definitely. So you just got into it because it was there then.
We just got into it because we enjoyed wine. We'd been drinking wine for many years, and I've been a cook for a long time, a good one, I would add, which kind of led into the winemaking. It's kind of a natural fit between the flavors of cooking and the flavors of wine. And, of course, the pairings are appropriate. So we didn't really have any experience in the wine industry. But we were very fortunate. We hooked up with some excellent consultants and managers, and they got us going. And I went to college and took some courses on enology and viticulture, and I started making some wine. Some of our wines have been made by another winery, but we have a variety of very good wines that we've been able to produce.
While you're on the subject of wines, tell us about your wines. What do you make?
I make our white wines. I make a Chardonnay every year that comes from our vineyard. It's a very fruity, lighter Chardonnay, not like the big oaky California Chardonnays, but a lot of people like that. And it's a very nice wine. We make a Gewürztraminer that is different than most. It's not the usual sweet German-style Gewürz, but it's an off-dry, quite fruity and a bit spicy wine, a little more full-bodied than the Chardonnay. Uh-huh. Very nice sipping wine, very nice wine to go with a medium-bodied or medium savory dish.
Those are the two wines, those are the ones you make. Then
that's what we currently have. We've also had a Viognier and some other white wines, but that's our current range. And then we have our Cabernet Sauvignon. Most of our vineyard is Cabernet Sauvignon. The vineyard was planted in 1988, so it's one of the oldest in our area. It's 23 years old.
Wow.
And we bought the vineyard in 2004. Our first wine was our 2006 Cab Sauv, which was released in 2009 when we opened the tasting room. That wine won a silver medal at World of Wine, our big regional competition.
Very good.
We were very proud of that.
Yeah.
We've made some other award-winning wines since then.
Well, it's always good to get that first one out there and have that win an award. That's a great thing to do.
We're sold out of that one. So, but it was a very nice full-bodied wine.
You continue to make the Cab every year. You, I noticed here on your website you use French oak. You age in French oak for 2 years.
All of our red wines have been aged in French oak for at least 2 years. We have a 2007 reserve that we actually left in French oak for 3 years.
Wow.
It was a medium-bodied wine, but by leaving it in French oak for another year, we got a little more fullness, a little more oak. It makes a very elegant, very nice wine that we were very pleased with.
It sound like it. I just... Big-bodied calves are just wonderful. I'm a fan. What kind of soil do you have around your vineyard?
Our vineyard is a clay, kind of a clay loam. It's a fairly friable soil. It's fairly loose, and it's quite deep. It's at least 3 to 4 feet deep in all of the areas of vineyard, deeper in some areas.
Wow.
That gives it has a lot of moisture holding capacity, and there are some vineyards in the area that actually do dry farming. We don't do that. We do irrigation, but we are able to modulate that, adjust that as necessary to give just the right amount of water to make the vines grow at their maximum. We use a vertical shoot positioning system that is most common in Oregon, at least. It gives us maximum sunlight. And in our area, the seasons are a little on the short side, so we're often pushing at the end of the year to try and get them ripe. But in a good year, we can make a really full-bodied, rich Cabernet Sauvignon, like in 2008. Our 2008 is a very big red.
Well, when do you get your bud break?
About a month after Napa.
Wow.
This last 2 years we've been very late, but about three to four weeks later. So we're usually around the 1st of June, third week of May before we actually get bud break. And last year I think it was June 11 or something, so it was quite late.
Yeah, really. When is your first cold snap come in then, that you got to get those grapes off the vine?
Well, we've been very fortunate the last 2 years that we didn't have a cold snap until, well, this year it was on October 2021, I believe.
Yeah.
And so it gave us enough of a long, warm autumn that we were able to get the grapes quite ripe. It was very nice.
Well, with that late of a bud break, I'm curious. I mean, you wouldn't have time to do much of anything if you got it any sooner.
That's right. We were pushing to get them ripe, that's for sure. But we did very well. We had a big crop, and we did nice flavor, and I think it'll do quite well.
Good, good. I forgot what I was going to ask just then. We were talking about the grapes, and I forgot what I was going to ask. The area, you say you're in an AVA there. What is the isn't that part of the bigger Southern Oregon AVA then?
Well, the two main AVAs in our area are the Rogue Valley and the Applegate Valley AVAs. There is also an Illinois Valley AVA, which is farther west. There are five counties that comprise the primary areas of Southern Oregon, and we're the most southern of those.
Mm.
So we have quite a lot of heat. We actually approximate the heat of Napa area, but in a little shorter season, and with very cool nights, which actually I think enhances the wine a bit. We're very similar to Bordeaux, France. It's an interesting comparison.
What is your highs and lows then during the summer?
Between about 90, in the main part of the summer, the highs will be 93 to 103.
Wow.
The lows may be down into the 50s.
Wow.
Which makes a cool evening, and I'm not sure how that works, but it seems to enhance the flavors of the wine. With our older vineyard, long established vines, we can make some very nice Cabernet.
Yeah, that it tends to concentrate sugars into the fruit, I understand. So
that's right.
That would help.
That's, our 2009, for instance, is not a real big heavy wine, but it's very elegant. It has a lot of nuance to it, a lot of fruit, and it's going to be a very nice wine. We haven't released that yet, but when we do, it'll be a great wine.
If you're oaking for two and a half years, and you still got another 6 months or so before you release it, then
that's about right. Yeah. Probably early summer, midsummer, somewhere there, when it's ready.
When it's ready, no wine before its time. That's really the key. Really the key. You mentioned something there, and I can't let it just slide past this. You mentioned alpacas. You have them?
We have a very unique venue. It's a very fun place to visit. Not only do we do the wine tasting of some very nice wines, we also have a herd of alpacas. We've got 30 of them, ranging from about 3 months to full adults. And they're beautiful animals, very gentle and peaceful, very nice to be around. And they produce a beautiful fiber that is extremely soft and warm. We shear them once a year, and we make hats and gloves and other garments, shawls and so on, from the fiber. And in addition, we get products from a U.S. co-op and import some products from Peru. So we have a range of sweaters, hats, gloves, et cetera, that are beautiful, including some blankets and very, very nice products. So we've got the alpaca herd. We've got a boutique of alpaca products. We've got the vineyard, of course, that people like to visit. We've got a grape arbor that is a beautiful place to picnic or to taste your wine, and then we've got the wine tasting room inside. So it's a fun place to visit, a little unique as far as wine tasting venues go.
Yeah, it sounds like, just for those of you out there listening who don't know what an alpaca is, it's just like a small llama.
That's correct.
Just the best way to describe it, just a miniature llama.
With a couple of differences. They have softer, warmer fur, the fiber we call it, and they don't spit as much. They do spit at each other occasionally, but they don't spit at us.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And,
They're very nice animals. We enjoy them a lot.
I like that, too. You don't call it fur or hair. You call it fiber.
That's right.
That's
distinguishes it from wool.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It doesn't have the prickliness of wool, so it's a very soft, warm garment. The garments are just beautiful.
Soft like cashmere?
Very close to cashmere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Very luxurious fiber.
That sounds good, you know, really, really interesting. My wife saw the picture of Santana here on your website, and she goes, "Oh, I want one."
Just tell her to come out and pick one.
Yeah, there you go. As long as they don't spit on it.
That's right. That's right. They're nice animals.
They look cute. They really do.
We have some just gorgeous babies that are really pretty and very, very nice to be around.
Yeah, I guess that fur too. They pay for themselves, you know, with their fiber. They pay for themselves. Yeah.
They pay their basic maintenance with their fiber, and we have their yarn available. We've got roving, which is the step before spinning. Mm-hmm. It's what's used to spin yarn, and we've got commercial and hand spun yarn. My wife spins, she makes the hats, she makes gloves, she makes shawls and so on. So quite an array of things.
Yeah. My wife doesn't do any of that, so that pretty much takes care of having us an alpaca.
You have to have two anyway. They are herd animals. They don't like
herd
to be lonely.
Animals,
so.
They probably won't get along with the cats then. Okay.
Maybe.
I noticed also, too, you have a bunch of apple trees on the property.
We have 75 fruit trees. We have apples, pears, peaches, plums, and walnuts.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of fruit. In fact, I'm making some apple cider, some hard apple cider this year. We'll see how that comes out. I can't tell anybody about it yet, but we'll see.
Okay, we'll keep it a secret. Another thing, too, we've been noticing on the weather, I'm sure everyone around the country has, about how it's really smacked Oregon. Has that affected you?
Well, the last 2 years have been difficult, but the trend toward warmer summers is actually in our favor, so we'll probably be able to produce even more good full-bodied reds in the future.
And this storm and all that went through, is that north of you then? That didn't affect you?
Most of that is north of us, but it doesn't really affect us. At this time of year, the vines are completely dormant and they won't be damaged. So it probably will actually be a fairly early spring this year, I believe.
Oh.
So we may get in the last week of May if we're lucky and get them going.
Get bud break when it's supposed to. No.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Who runs the place? Is you and your wife, or do you have family?
I have
or?
Consultants and managers that work with me, but I do most of it. Since we moved up there in 2008, I've run most of the vineyard, and I have help, of course, that helps us with the management, but it's a lot of work. It's kind of fun to be out in the fields, and in fact, we allow people to come pick our fruit, and we don't even charge them for the privilege.
That's mighty kind of you.
We had about 25 people this year that came and picked, and I was amazed at how hard they worked. It was really great.
People
we had
like
professional pickers as well, but,
yeah,
but
people
they
like
enjoyed
that.
Being involved.
Always,
they enjoy being involved. They like to see what the process is. They like to do the bottling. We have people help us with bottling and labeling and so on, corking and all of that. And they just like to get in and put some hands on.
And, you know, I find that all over the country. We've talked to wineries throughout the country, and a lot of them have volunteers that come and help them with harvest and different things. And so it's really quite common. You're right. People like doing that. And, I mean, who is it us as wineries to refuse them that pleasure? So
that's right. We're fortunate. We're a very small boutique winery, and we're very hands-on, and we're personally involved with it. So we can get involved with our people and our wine club members, particularly, we get very well acquainted with, and we have a good time with them. So we give them the opportunity to participate in these various events.
Yeah.
Including shearing day for the alpacas and bottling.
Oh, you did, right? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
One question I always like to ask wineries, too, is the government up there, your county, your area, the state, good, bad, indifferent? You wish they dropped dead or you want to hug them?
Well, the county of Jackson County in southern Oregon, has been actually quite helpful. But the state laws are somewhat restrictive. So the combination, it took us about a year to get a license for the winery, and somewhat difficult, a lot of hoops to go through. And, of course, we're regulated at three different levels. We were regulated by the county to some degree. Then the state has its liquor commission, and the feds have
finger
CTV,
in the pie.
Which is, they have their finger very much in the pie.
Yeah.
In fact, I just finished three tax returns after the first of the year.
Everybody I'm talking to, I tell them we are at the end of the quarter, end of the year, and end of the month. You know, so
that's right.
Everybody
wants a piece of the action.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I you know, the winery, I have a winery, and same thing. It's just, you know, this time of year, I mean, just hate. We all start dreading Christmas because we know it's followed by January. And so.
That's right. Back to work.
Back to work and pay the bills, So the government hasn't really, you know, I guess, Oregon laws, but you would think that with over 450 wineries in Oregon that they would be really quite liberal in their laws and everything.
Well, they just passed a major revision to the laws at the state level that, on the one hand, gave quite a bit of privileges for wineries, and on the other hand, for very small wineries like we are, they put some restrictions on us. So it was kind of a mixed blessing for us. I think for the industry as a whole, it probably will be a major improvement. But the state has been more restrictive in the past, and with time, I think as they realize the financial benefit that wineries are bringing to Oregon, they'll probably loosen up a bit.
Definitely. Oregon is noted around the world for their quality wines. You would think that they would bend over backward because of, you know, the possibilities of income for the state and everything else.
Wineries produced $1.3 billion, I believe, for Oregon last year.
Wow!
So they're a major player in the economy of Oregon, and I think the legislators are beginning to realize that. So with time, we have a very active winery association, and with time, I think we'll be able to convince them of our values.
Yeah, you would hope so. What are you on a wine trail? Are you part of a wine trail?
We have a local association of wineries in our immediate Jacksonville area, but we haven't been able to get into the larger ones. We certainly are members of the associations and so on, but there's no wine tour in our immediate area. We do have wine tours, but not an organized winery sponsored one. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, there's
working
a lot of
on
wine.
That.
There's a lot
the,
of wine.
The Applegate
area.
Valley is very organized and has a very nice wine trail maps and so on. And we're on the Southern Oregon Winery Association maps, so we're definitely available and working on getting more visible. But that's got a ways to go yet.
Yeah, well, yeah. It takes time. Mike, do you have any questions for Jim here?
The only thing, I noticed you have an order form on your website to order wines, and I was just wondering if you had any shipping restrictions. Are there, you know, I know some states don't allow it, you know, coming into the state, but do you have any going out of state that you're restricted
there
from?
There are, I believe there are about 19 states that don't allow us to ship to them. But somewhere on the internet site, we have that list. I don't have it offhand. I can't tell you exactly where it is, but there are most states we can ship to, and we're happy to do that. We do ship quite a bit direct to consumers. So,
do you do all the shipping yourself, or do you have online distributors or something?
We do it all ourselves. Okay. Everything is our baby right now.
Okay.
But we're still small enough that we can do that, and we're very happy to.
All right. That's it. That's all I was looking into. Yeah,
you open year-round, or you...
We're open year-round. We have changed our hours for January and February. We're open only on Saturday and Sunday these 2 months.
Oh.
And then starting in March, we'll be back to our regular schedule of Thursday through Monday, 11 to 5. Yes, we're open year-round, but a little bit restricted in the winter.
Have you finished your pruning and all that yet for the year?
We just started pruning. We probably won't finish until close to the end of February. I just have one or two people that do it slowly.
How many acres do you have planted there?
We have 6.5 acres.
Uh-huh.
Pretty small place.
Yeah, well, 6.5 acres can give you a lot of grapes, though. So
we produced 12 tons of Cabernet Sauvignon this year. So
wow, yeah,
we have a lot of fruit.
Answered that question there. Anything else, Mike?
Nope, that's it. That's all.
Jim, thank you very, very much for your time. We really appreciate
you are
that.
Very
you're
very welcome.
Able to join us.
Can I mention they can go to capricevineyards.com?
We want you to mention
it.
Everything. We want you to give your address, your phone number, your email, your website, your Facebook, everything. So if anybody wants to get a hold of Caprice Vineyards, they can do so. Before you do that, though, Caprice, how'd you come up with the name?
A caprice is a frolic or a whimsy.
Uh-huh.
And starting out a winery just because there's a vineyard on your land is certainly a caprice.
All right. That's good. I like that. Yeah, I like that. So the name fits. All right. If you'd like to give us information about Caprice Vineyards, go right ahead. I'd like to hear everything.
Well, our address is 970 Old Stage Road, Central Point, Oregon, 97502. We are just 1 mile out of the historic mining town of Jacksonville, Oregon, and 5 miles from Medford, which is about 30 miles above the California border. So we're just in the very southern end of Oregon. Our phone number is 541-499-0449. And if someone wants to communicate by email, I'm jim@capricevineyards.com.
Facebook?
We are on Facebook under Caprice Vineyards.
Very good. All right. And so that's pretty much it. If anybody wants to get a hold of Caprice Vineyard, you can get a hold of Jim. If you have any questions, anything, they have some fantastic Cabernets.
Yes, we do.
If they're anywhere near what he described, then you can't go wrong. Thank you, Jim, for your time. We really appreciate it. Thank you for agreeing to be on with us tonight and taking some time out of your day. And best of luck to you. And if we're ever up in that area, we will definitely stop by and visit with you.
Please do. Thank you very much, Ron.
Cool. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Wow.
Good speaker.
That was very interesting.
Had a very good, interesting
show tonight. And, you know, the other White Oak, also in Illinois, had a connection with alpacas as well. And
oh.
I don't know if they mentioned. Yeah, I noticed that on their website. And, it's interesting. And I was just going to mention that I visited an alpaca farm up in Washington State. So they're,
uh-huh.
Yeah, they're very cool animals. And he's right about the fur. It's very different. Well, the fibers.
Not fur.
It's fibers. Yes. It's very different than you know what you might be used to. It's really cool. So but I just saw that connection. I go, wow. Two alpaca farms.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I decided
while I was talking to him, I'm not any longer going to get a haircut. I think I will now get a fiber cut.
Yes. Okay. All righty.
I like that term. I like him. Fiber, not.
Okay. All right. Well, very good show. And I took another page and a half. So writing things down. But anyway, I was going to mention something about, you know, you can get a transcript of the whole show, but that's like, what, $150-something? I forget how much it was.
Yeah, something like
that. That was amazing. So paraphrase just everything and just take notes.
Yeah. Or just
so,
listen.
Yeah. Listen to it. Yeah, there you go. So, very good show.
It was. It was.
So
we had some good speakers today.
So next week we will do a replay of our show from yesterday with Gregory V. Jones, Greg Jones, the professor from Southern Oregon University. So we'll have that again next Thursday at 7 p.m. And that took pretty much the entire show. So and then some. So that'll be a whole show next week. It'll be a replay because it was definitely a special thing. Well, they're all special, but I'm saying it was a different time, and we came on a different time and a different day, and so we'll play it again next week at our regular time, so people can listen to it, you know, again for the first time.
Which is another point too. While you just mentioned that, let me expand on that. If any of you out there listening to this on archives or live or anything know of any speakers, anybody that you think might be a good fit for the program, and they can't do it at 7 Eastern time, we can always get in touch with them anytime. We can always schedule a special program and get them on and then replay it on the regular time slot. So if anyone out there knows of anyone or even yourself, then we will be more than happy to accommodate you for a slot on the program.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to define any time because, you know, 3 a.m.
Yeah.
That's going to be a little difficult. So.
There you go.
Good luck getting me for that one.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. But we'll try and accommodate, you know, whatever time, days are convenient. And, you know, if like we did yesterday, you know, we did a live show and it's automatically being recorded, we can always play it back at a different time when, you know, the majority of our listeners know when we're going to be on. So anything's possible. So, very cool. So that'll be on next week, Thursday.
That'll be on next week. And it's well worth a listen. He was really, really quite informative.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very interesting. It was still dealing with wine, but it was more of the technicalities, you know, weather-wise, the climate and everything involved in that affects, you know, what our main topic is. And he goes into that in some pretty good, interesting detail. So. Definitely tune in for that. It was a good show.
Talked a lot about Terror and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking it's also on archives anyway, so you could probably listen to it then. Anyway,
if you want to, you can, you know, pop in, but it's on.
Yeah, it'll be on.
You can listen to it on a regular time slot, but.
Yeah, it'll be on again next week, and then we'll continue on with Oregon on the following week, which would be February 2nd.
Yeah, we'll be heading up to. Willamette Valley.
Okay.
Willamette. Yes. Willamette. Oh, that's going to be Groundhog Day, too, February 2nd.
Oh, wow. Okay. Bring your shadows or don't, and we'll see what happens. So we'll go, I'll just write that down. All right. I guess we will close the show unless you have anything else to add about this area.
Class this weekend, but that's full, and so we're
excellent.
Nothing else to add this week. Thank you all for tuning in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We will be, we'll be back, I'll be back because I have to run the audio, but we'll be back next Thursday to tell you about the Wine Fest coming up next Saturday, not this Saturday, but next Saturday.
I'll probably come on with you again and listen to Greg again. So. Because I was scribbling notes and everything, and I just might listen to him next week.
Yeah, there you go. So we'll be back live, but, you know, next Thursday. But it'll be a recorded thing anyway. It'll work.
It'll work,
It'll be a replay of what's in the archive for yesterday's show. Good. Yeah. Okay, there we go. But we'll be here. All right. Y'all have a great rest of the week, and have a great wine class Saturday, and hope everything is sounds like you're going to have a pretty full house there, so that's going to be good.
Yeah.
And we'll see you all next Thursday right here on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. You'll have a good one. And I forgot. Let me grab my information here before we actually close down. I want to say Ron is the Vice President General Manager of Florida State's Winery, which is located –
Winery.
Okay.
Winery.
And it is located –
at Willamette.
But, yeah, there you go. Tomato. potato. I forgot.
Winery.
Anyway, located 4 miles west of I-75 on State Road 52. That's 25241 State Road 52. Right here in Florida. It's Land O'Lakes, Florida. And you go to Interstate 75, which was quite backed up this morning at about 7. There was an accident on 75 and an accident on 275. It took like an hour to get to work in Tampa. But anyway, go to exit 285 and head west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs to Florida State's Winery. Or you can go east on U.S. 41. From U.S. 41, the Suncoast Parkway, or U.S. 19 if you live way out on the actual coast area, and go east on State Road 52, and you'll see the signs about 4 miles from the interstate. But it's varying degrees from U.S. 41 and all that. It's like 10 miles, 20 miles, and all that. But for more information, call the winery directly at area code 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113, or email corp, C-O-R-P, at floon.com. That's corp at F-L-E-W-N.com. Or visit the website at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com, and stop in. They're open daily from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. You can do the tastings and also retail sales. They have a fantastic gift shop there with all kinds of wine-related products and cool stuff. And also was it grapeseed oil? You have grapeseed
yes.
oil, so that's also in there, and it's very, very good and
good
definitely
oil.
Something you want to pick up. Yep, very good. And also a little picnic area in the back with some giant shady oak trees, and it's just a great setting. So come on out, plenty of parking, and only thing is just closed major holidays. So and there's not too many of them right now until, Easter the next one, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So every day, 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, closed major holidays. So very cool. And if you want to email the show, any questions, comments, or, you know, if you have a guest in mind but they can't appear during our regular time slot, you want to work out something else, email the show, and that is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All right? There you go. Woo!
Yeah.
That was 20 minutes. Okay, we will see you all. We'll see you all next week. Thanks to both of our guests, all our guests tonight, from Caprice Vineyards and Winery and White Oak Vineyards in Illinois. Thank you all very much. It was very, very,
very informative.
Very great to have you all on there. And we'll see
yes.
you all next time.
Thank you, guests.
Have a good.